Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Prairie grouse and pheasant hunting forecasts are both in the books and available for you to listen to, including our first ever games of prairie grouse and pheasant hunting battleship, which can only mean one thing. Today, it's the final grand finale in our trifecta of battleships, and that would be quail battleship wrapped around the quail forever quail hunting forecast. Today's episode brought to you, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. Today's episode features back for his third game of battleship, Quail Forever Journal editor Ryan Sparks,
the returning champion,
four-way champion, throwing down some shade. Very nice. First game of battleship back on the podcast, Quail Forever program manager Andy Edwards, joining us from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Hey, hey. And returning to the podcast, it's probably been 2 years. Good friend of the organization, was a featured speaker, the Women on the Wing Bruncheon at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Sioux Falls. She's the editor of Gundog Magazine and the host of Wild Upland and Outdoor Channel, Callie Parmalee. Callie, thank you very much for joining.
It's been a while, guys. I'm glad I'm here.
Since you're the non-employee, give our listeners kind of the 2 minute Callie Parmalee story.
Sure. So I'm Callie Parmalee, editor of Gundog Magazine and host of Wild Upland on the Outdoor Channel. And I started bird hunting. I'm an adult onset hunter. So I got a bird dog by chance, and he turned me into a bird hunter. I think that's normally how the story goes, mm-hmm. right? And his name was Lincoln. He was a lab, and recently just lost him. So RIP to my buddy Lincoln. But
condolences.
Yes. But we became bird hunters and hunt all across the country now. And now I've got a setter named Jones from Northwoods, your guys' neck of the woods. And then a new addition named Trek. He is a six-month-old English setter from here in Utah. And boy, he is a handful. So I call him my little velociraptor. But I love bird hunting all across the country. And just going to preface right now, I'm going to lose this battle. I'm not a big quail hunter, but
I don't believe it.
I try.
So when we had, when I had you on last, Lincoln was in his prime, and you had just got your first English setter as a puppy. And part of your thought process, at least what I recall, was, you know, as the editor of Gundog, you wanted to see the world from a pointing dog perspective for as a hunter and as a trainer. And now you've went with two setters in a row. So what's your thought process today on the switch and why you added a second setter?
Sure. That's a really good question, actually, because I will always love my labs. Honestly, the thought process behind it was I enjoy how a pointing dog works. I hunt primarily in the West, so I need a big, far-ranging dog. And I really enjoy just having my gun cracked open over my shoulder until the dog goes on point, right? When you got a lab, you kind of always got to be ready, and you feel a little bit anxious all the time. And then the other half of it was 100%. I'm just not ready to replace Lincoln. Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And, mostly I really enjoy the style of a setter. I love the far ranging dog and depending on the, you know, I'm coming to the Northwoods here soon, so I hope they don't range 300 yards in the Northwoods.
They might.
Yeah, they might for the first few days. they'll learn, but I just really enjoy this style of a setter. And then honestly, in the home, I love the cuddly off switch, sweet setter eyes. You know, I there's something to say about that. So
awesome.
That's why I went with another setter.
Well,
isn't that amazing how a dog can change your life? Like, not a hunter, dog, now like on your like multiple dogs, editor of Gundog Magazine, like changes your life, changes your career.
He did. He changed everything for me, and I'm so thankful for him. And oh, don't make me cry, Ryan.
I won't stop it. I've been
no,
there.
No, it is funny how he changed my absolute world for me, and I couldn't be more thankful, because it just ignited a passion in both of us, you know. And so that's just what we do, what I do. And I can't get enough of upland hunting. So, and now look, I'm on my third bird dog, and man, yeah. I'm ready to open a kennel. You know what? Let's do it. Let's do it now.
It's all in.
Wonderful. All right. I want to take a moment and recognize, as I mentioned in the onset, Purina Pro Plan, the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast, the official dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Tremendous partners. My pups, Esky, Gitche, and Winter, all eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports wildlife habitat conservation, which is incredibly important to me, and it should be to all of our listeners. But Purina Pro Plan also has a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their food. It is simply the best dog food for bird dogs. Purina Pro Plan Sport, that's the bag featuring purple text and a German shorthair, was created to fuel hardworking bird dogs like yours and mine. For increased endurance, joint support, and muscle tone, it all starts with Purina Pro Plan Sport. Learn more at proplansport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right, as I mentioned in the onset, this is kind of a two-parter, or two concepts here, which is similar to what we've done with the prairie grouse primer, and then the pheasant hunting episode that you would have just listened to last week. We're going to give a short overview of the quail hunting forecast, and then we're going to play a fun game of quail hunting battleship. First ever, by the way. All right, so let's start with Ryan Sparks, Quail Forever Journal editor and the editor of the annual Quail Forever Quail Hunting Forecast. Give us an overview of what quail hunters can expect, Ryan, based on the compilation, the monster project that you just completed.
Yeah, it was a big one. And, you know, overall, 2024 looks like it's going to be a really great year for quail. There's certainly areas of the country where quail are struggling, but I think there's a lot to be thankful for going into the 2024 season. I'll just hit some highlights, and then people can dig into the specific state reports that they're interested in. In the South, we've had some really, really good reports coming out of Oklahoma and Texas. There's areas where they're still struggling with drought, but you know, certain areas that are good for quail received good rainfall this last year. And I heard from multiple people that the habitat is looking really good. People are seeing and hearing lots of quail. So I actually heard from multiple people that in Texas and Oklahoma, they think it will be their best quail season since 2017.
Wow.
So yeah. That sounds amazing. And then more in the Southeast, states like Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, the populations are steady. You know, it should be comparable to the last few years. About like usual was a phrase that came up a lot in the reports we got. One big surprise for me that put a smile on my face was from Arkansas. And I actually grabbed a little snippet, our reporter for that, Oliver Hartner, because I just think he did a great job of summing it up. And I want to use his words. So he says, "Though successional habitat continues to challenge quail populations across much of Arkansas, areas with best land management practices have covey counts comparable or better than 20 years ago. Quail numbers are still the best they've been in Arkansas for at least a generation, and the successes experienced here emphasize the importance of maintaining viable quail habitat while finding more properties with potential." And I just love reading that report because it shows that the habitat work we are doing works. Mm-hmm. So shout out to our team in Arkansas.
I'll double down on that. Arkansas, I think about Arkansas is on the rise. It's one of those states that's like a rocket ship from habitat perspective, member growth, chapter growth. Our team in I think about Howard Vinson's words, they're fire eaters down in Arkansas. They're doing a lot of good things. So that's really encouraging, Ryan.
Yeah. And then kind of going to my home turf in the Midwest, Illinois had a mild winter. Things are sounding really good there. States like Nebraska and Kansas, they've had a few years of drought. But from the roadside surveys and anecdotal reports, it sounds like we're starting to see a rebound in quail populations there. And really, it sounds like quail are doing pretty good all across the Great Plains. So I'm looking forward to verifying if that is correct when quail season opens in Nebraska.
Verifying with a shotgun in your hands.
Exactly.
Behind an English pointer.
Very scientific research. Yeah,
it's important.
In the Southwest, I mean, the good news just kind of keeps coming. 2024, banner year for desert quail in the Southwest. So strong populations coming into 2024, good precipitation, good habitat, above average quail call survey data. One state that stood out to me, and it was our first year doing a quail report for that state, is Nevada. And so it looks like they're going to have a great year for quail in Nevada. If anyone's been kicking around the idea going to Nevada to hunt, you know, there's quail. There's a lot of other birds in Nevada to hunt as well. Might be a good year to try that out. And I'll just leave it at that for now. You know, I would really encourage folks to dig into the state reports we put together. You know, our internal team works really hard on it. We hire a whole fleet of freelance journalists to put it together. It's our largest quail forecast to date with 28 states covered.
Yeah.
And then within those reports, there's links to like specific regions within states. There's roadside surveys, there's whistle counts, there's what the weather's been like, what the drought's like. So there's a lot of statistics to really dig your teeth into and nerd out over, which I like to do. So it was fun. It was a fun big project to put together, and I would encourage people to go take it.
Right on. The quail hunting forecast, much like the pheasant hunting forecast, is the number one visited piece of content we produce in a year.
I believe
it is on the homepage right now, quailforever.org. If you're listening to this episode, maybe later in the hunting season or even outside of the hunting season, you can find it under the hunting tab right on the homepage and check it out. But right now it's front and center in the hero image. And thanks to Sportsman's Guide for sponsoring it. Ryan talked a lot about how the scientific data led to the state-by-state forecasts, you know, the whistle counts and what our biologist team and state biologist team is seeing and hearing out there. Andy, you probably talked to more quail partners, agencies, professors that are studying quail, as well as our own employee team and chapters in the quail range than any other person. What's the anecdotal side of the equation? What are you hearing about quail numbers across the country?
Yeah, I think Ryan basically filled all the great points already. So I'm gonna follow up though and say that I would echo what he had said, and I agree. Had a meeting about a month ago down in Mississippi with the National Bob White and Grasslands Initiative folks, the technical committee, which is made up of most of those state agencies, small game or quail coordinators. And there was a lot of positive energy there, a lot of great things going on. I think our state spotlights for Bob White typically tend to be looking at, you know, certain areas within states. You know, there may not be great quail success stories across all those states. Tennessee, for example, they instituted their first quota hunt for quail this year. And so looking forward to that. Bright spots out of Georgia and Alabama, Mississippi, all those southern states, but I think probably Texas and Oklahoma would have to be the shining stars that I've heard of, both through our team, through those agency biologists, and then also just through friends that I know that are hunting out there. It's looking like a pretty spectacular year. You might want to plan or figure it out for the Southern Plains.
There's no quail in Texas. Don't go there.
I'm not going any farther than that. But I would also say, Bob, you know, you're right. Those, like, these forecasts are not, we try hard not to spotlight, you know, exact locations, mm-hmm. but you'll get some really good tips on regions and areas in certain states that are going to be hot. And I'd say too, you know, once that forecast comes out, don't hesitate to, you know, ahead of months or weeks, at least ahead of your hunt, reach out to those Quail Forever biologists or state coordinators in states, or to the small game biologists in the states, and just, you know, talk with them, get some tips. They're always helpful.
You know, and it is very encouraging to me, the positivity around quail numbers and the hunting season ahead. When I think about, you know, the creation of Quail Forever back in 2005, it was a constant refrain of a lament. Yep. Quail are gone. There's habitat is precipitous decline. And I'm not saying, you know, this isn't, you know, duckies and bunnies, you know, I'm clear on the habitat losses, right?
Sure.
But when you think about the momentum, particularly the what Working Lands for Wildlife and the focus that's been put on bobwhite quail over the last 12 months.
Right.
You can, I want to direct listeners to a film, A New Era for Bobwhite Quail. We put it out a couple months ago, but that'll give you a great overview of how Quail Forever, in partnership with USDA, is working to restore massive acres quail habitat back on the landscape. And while it's going to take time, we could see some of the fruits of that when weather cooperates. Mm-hmm. And it is really encouraging to have that positivity. It's like, I remember, Andy, when you first interviewed for this role, one of your key words is, we got to bring the hope back. We got to bring the hope back, right?
That's right.
And we have hope because we have some good indications that the tide is, it's a long way to go. I'm not Pollyanna, but the tide is turning a little bit, and there's some really positive indications that numbers are going to be good this year.
We also can't get hooked on the hopium. I mean, we got to be careful, but we're doing a lot of really great things. I had to throw it in there, but you know, we're not just hoping. I mean, we have 251 chapters of Quail Forever. We've done over 7 million acres of habitat. I mean, in 2013, we started with our kind of first people on the ground, boots on the ground in the quail range. We're at 100 now working in the bobwhite range. I mean, in the bobwhite range. And so it's a little scary, but a really fun to watch the growth of Quail Forever. And to say exponential would not be an understatement.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing we could really use are more members. You know, so here's the request to listeners that are not yet members of Quail Forever. Maybe you're in the pheasant range and you travel once a year to hunt quail. We need you. We're around 20,000 memberships at Quail Forever, compared to 120,000 Pheasants Forever members. And we've rolled out a bunch of collaborations here: Duck Camp, Grain Belt Premium, Duluth Trading Company, and everybody in the and my social feeds that are quail members. Like, where's ours? We want that partnership. And I hear you loud and clear, but these companies want more members, bigger audience to sell their wares to. And we need you, the listener, to get involved. And those bigger number of members means more habitat and a louder voice in Washington, D.C. So if you're not yet a member, Quail Forever, go to quailforever.org/join and get involved. I'll transition. Here's one of those great partners, Grain Belt Premium and Grain Belt Premium Light. The Pheasant Friendly Beer, and a new partner of Pheasants Forever, they unveiled camo cases and camo cans and camo bottles on September 15th. And Andy Edwards, although we're not filming, is wearing his Grain Belt Premium Blaze Orange hat. Grain Belt's not in the quail range, though. It's six states around Minnesota. So if there's a comparable beer in the quail range listening to this, we'd love to create a partnership with you.
I'm throwing this out right now. Quail
ale. Quail ale. There you go. Our Grain Belt Premium moment of this episode comes from, and this gentleman and his wife posted on every single social media to participate in this, so thank you, Brian Narothewell, and I probably butchered your name, Brian, but you are today's Grain Belt Premium winner. Brian's story, his premium moment, here you go. It was my first year going on a trip, and I'm on a hunting trip with my dad. He dropped me off to start walking a piece of ground with our Black Lab Scout. My dad walked the other side of the plot of land, and I walked towards him. As I was walking, Scout flushed a lone rooster. My heart immediately raced. I yelled rooster, pulled my gun up, and even though it was a far shot, I connected and watched the bird drop. I quickly clicked my safety on, ran into the water, and on the other side of the bank, there was my pup Scout with a rooster in his mouth. My dad was just a short distance away, and he came over to me, gave me a high five, and we hugged. I had a smile from ear to ear and couldn't believe I did it. I had bagged my first rooster in Iowa, by the way, all on my own. Pheasant hunting is an unforgettable experience, and I look forward to it every year. I am grateful for my dad, who taught me how to pheasant hunt, and the experiences that we still have today. And now I look forward to taking my fiance. So I apologize. Called her his wife. Is his fiance joining the next trip this hunting season? So thank you, Brian, for submitting today's Grain Belt Premium Moment via Instagram. You've got a Grain Belt prize pack headed your way. All right. Now the game we've all been waiting for, the game of quail hunting battleship, and we get to get Callie back involved in the conversation. All right, here's the game. We're going to go around the horn with our favorite tips to hunt quail. Here's kind of the caveat here. All six quail species in play. So you got six different quail species, bobwhites, Montezuma or Mearns, whatever you want to call them based on where you're from, gambles. We got scaled blues, cotton tops, all one bird, mountain quail, and finally, this is California or valley quail. And Andy keeps walking away and grabbing different props. That's the noise you hear in the background. All right, sorry. So we're gonna offer our tip, and if the person offers a tip that is on somebody's list later in the game, you will have sunk that person's quail battleship. And what's at stake? Well, quail bragging rights, of course. Going first with the opportunity to start the game off in the lead, the editor of Gun Dog Magazine, Callie Parmalee. What is your first quail tip, Callie?
Of course I have to.
This is a benefit. Which is kind of funny,
I recently just played Battleship with a 9-year-old just like 2 weeks ago. So this is really strange.
It's not really strange because you got like three 9-year-olds here.
Same intellectual level. I mean, we're there. It's great.
He like pulled it out. I'm like, that game still exists. All right. I typically hunt Western quail. So we're going California first. Here in Utah, my first tip is you can find them in my backyard. No, I'm just kidding. Idaho, I tend to find California quail. I look for dry riverbeds that are surrounded typically by sage scrub. And sometimes you can even find them. I have found them out in the sagebrush opens. As long as there's water nearby, you can even find them where there's pinyon junipers. I found them along desert mountain foothills, but mostly you're looking for dry riverbeds surrounded by sage scrub.
I love it. That's probably the number one tip I hear when I go with seasoned quail hunter, like find, especially in the West, like a wash, a drainage, water equates to quail. I left it off my list because I figured somebody was going to knock that one out of the park. And Callie starts the game off in the lead with number one. What about Andy and Ryan? Any battleships? Oh, whoa. You guys more Bob White quail. What? So Callie's going to hit me with a couple of these, I'm guessing. All right. Callie in the lead. Andy, you're up next.
All right. So, you know, got in my head a bit after listening to the prairie grouse primer here. So I'm going with an obscure one first, hopefully. Audio scouting. Go and listen. We scout for deer and turkeys. We don't typically scout. We may look on, you know, on X. We may do those sorts of things. But audio scout. This can be during breeding season. This can be, you know, night before, early morning. Pretty small home range. Typically, yeah, I'm referring to Bob White's here because I know the Western quail can have a much larger home range. But Bob White quail, 40 acres. You know, that's a 16th of a square mile. So a quarter acre or quarter mile square is an average home range size. And so go out and scout. Go listen to them the night before, the covey call, or possibly if you're around, this is your home turf, June, July, if you hear a male calling, there's going to be a covey there in the fall.
That's a terrific, terrific tip. It's actually, so when this, as we're recording this, our pheasant hunting episode is not out yet. Mm-hmm. But for listeners, now they're hearing this, Jared actually brought out listening to roosters cackle in the morning to identify where they're at. So, you know, we've got all these senses. We so often refer to or rely on our eyes, and our ears can tell us an awful lot too. That's a great one, Andy.
Maybe that's why I picked it, because I'm pretty much like about six eye surgeries in on being halfway blind. So, you know, maybe that's why I lean on that one.
It's a great one. I mean, we measure quail by whistle counts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it makes terrific sense.
That's right.
Sparks, did he sink a battleship? No. Callie?
He did not.
All right.
Nope. Didn't think of that one.
Woo.
Safe. Well, all right, Ryan, let's go for the three-way tie.
Okay. I got to start by addressing the elephant in the room, and that is that all my tips are for Bob Whites because that's all I've ever hunted. I'm going to fix that this winter. Got a trip planned. A couple trips planned, actually. But mine are all going to be for Bob Whites. So my first tip, pick a bird. As the editor of the Quail Forever Journal, I get to read a lot of hunting stories. And the number one word people use to describe a covey rise is explosive. And that's because it's true. A covey rise is explosive, chaotic magic. So what happens is a lot of people, they just stab the gun out there in the general area of the birds and they empty both their barrels and they're like, how did I miss? So pick a bird, mount the gun, keep your head down on the gun. A lot of people want to peek and look at the amazingness that is a covey rise. Pick a single bird. You've got more time than you think. And it looks like I sunk Bob's battleship.
You're a dirty pot licker is what you are. Gosh, yes, you took my second tip off the board, you son of a gun.
I could see the color come out of your face.
Yeah, I did have that listed as my second. I phrased it slightly different. I phrased it in baseball analogy, slow down the covey rise and focus on a single bird. I was thinking about this. Do you remember the, I think it was called, it was with Kevin Costner as a Detroit Tiger pitcher, movie. Yeah, I'm blanking on the name of the film right now, but he says, engage the mechanism when he's a pitcher. Do you remember this? And like everything on the outside, can't hear the crowd anymore. It just watches the batter. And that's what I think about. Like you're in the zone as the covey rises, and you just pick one bird out. So yeah, you knocked me out of contention, very likely, Ryan. Well done. Congrats.
For the love of the game.
For the love of the game, yes. Thank you. That's what it was.
Fantastic movie.
Well, at least for round one, I'm going to try to tie for the lead here. So the first tip I had, and this comes compliments of every single quail biologist I've ever had on this podcast, said, Bob, quail are shrub obligates.
And
it sticks in my head. Yep. I think Dwayne Elmore, when he was with Oklahoma, mm-hmm. maybe Oklahoma State Greg University, said that first. He's now with Tall Timbers, but quail gravitate to shrubs. And, you know, when it's warm out, they gravitate towards shrubs for cooler temperatures. Oh. When it's cold out, they gravitate to them for warmer temperatures, but they're shrub obligates. So at least for a moment, we have a four-way tie. Because wow.
I was thinking I was going to get out of it when you said shrub obligates. But yeah, I was going to say, you know, super pay attention to woody cover, not just in the winter, but those warmer temperatures.
Oh,
super critical. Yeah.
So we got a game, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
And then there were two.
There were two with all the points on the board. All right, Andy, for a moment, you can take first place by rolling out your second tip in round two.
What? No, is Callie first?
We're going fantasy football. Callie went first. So now you get to move up.
I'm on the. I'm thinking Sporting Clays. I could get to the go that more than fantasy.
Don't worry. You'll go at some point, but you get to go
first. All right. Checking birds' crops can teach you a lot. Learn to identify the seeds that they eat and also where those plants grow. This can be obviously, you know, year long, but of course during the season. Kill a bird, look at the crop, make sure you know what those seeds are, try to identify them through books, you know, get some help, figure it out. But that could teach you a lot. Keep you from taking long walks.
That's a great suggestion. I hear about it 10% compared to rough grouse hunters. Mm. Right? Like pheasant hunters and quail hunters, I hear it like 10%, like a fraction of sure. how often I hear rough grouse hunters. Like every grouse hunter is like, pop it open. Like, are they eating bugs? Are they eating berries? Are they eating buds?
Yeah.
What's your perception? Is that a pretty common practice in quail country?
The circle I'm in, yeah, because it's a bunch of biologists. But yeah, I think we're all checking. I mean, it's pretty amazing at times because it can be like you can kill one that's got 1,000 ragweed seeds in it, but you can also, yeah, definitely bird nerds. But you can also kill one that's got, you know, 15 willow oak acorns in it, and you're like, what in the world is that? You know, it looks like a tumor on the front, and be acorns.
I'll throw this out there. I love to fly fish. And when I lived in Montana, the most elite fly anglers that I knew carried looked like a little turkey baster with them. And when they caught a fish, they'd fill it with water. They'd squirt that turkey baster, the water down into the trout, uh-huh. and then suck it back up and it would suck in what they had eaten. And they would look at it and compare what the trout were eating right then wow. to their flies. And then that would be their fly selection. And I mean, those people that did that, I mean, people laughed at them for doing it, but it works. And I would say if you have the opportunity to do the same thing for birds, why not?
Yeah.
It is kind of funny. Why do we do it for every other bird, but not for quail?
Yeah.
Every bird we check.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, I got clear again, right? Or I didn't.
You are in first place at the moment. With two points. The other nugget you threw out there that maybe you didn't realize, if you ever have an opportunity, listeners, ever have an opportunity to go bird hunting with a biologist, who's specific to that species, a quail biologist, mm-hmm. go quail hunting, pheasant biologist, ruffed grouse, prairie grouse. And if that person is a legit hunter, they're stone cold killers because they know everything about the habitat, the daily maturations of where those birds are at, what they're eating at different times of year. Boy, that, yeah, I think about Aaron Sandquist, Ben Bigalke, a couple guys that I've been able to go pheasant hunting with that just taught Rick Young taught me volumes by being a biologist and a stone cold killer.
Can't believe you're giving Bigalke credit for being a stone cold killer.
Oh yeah. He's no he's doubt about obnoxious. It. Shout out to Ben. All right. Ryan Sparks, can you tie for second place?
I can.
Let's have it.
All right. Don't miss permission season. And what I mean is, so where I grew up hunting in Southeast Nebraska, it is 99.9% private land. And if you want to hunt, you have to ask permission for it. And for me, permission season is the end of January through February. Hmm. So the past season is still fresh in your mind. You remember those places that you drove past that looked juicy and you wanted to hunt. You will be the first person to ask. I guarantee you, if you knock on somebody's door in February, at least in Nebraska, and you say, can I hunt quail? You're going to be the first person to ask. And a lot of landowners only give permission to one person. Permission season is also scouting season. So you're using OnX to find landowners. OnX tells you who owns the land. It also tells you the tax address for certain properties. And generally, the tax address is just the address of the person that owns it. So you can plug that in your GPS, see if they're home. I'll take a weekend and just drive around with a thermos of coffee, knock on doors, scout. I actually enjoy it. A lot of people like are afraid to go knock on doors. I love it. So don't miss permission season. I think it's one of the most valuable times of the year to work towards the following.
That's a great suggestion. Since I already have lost my point opportunity for round two, since Ryan, you already stole that one from me. you sunk the battle.
Right.
I will give a shout out and thanks to landowners who open up their property for public access through walk-in programs. So thanks to all the landowners in Quail Country that are signed up for OLAP in Oklahoma or Open Fields and Waters in Nebraska, Weehaw in Kansas, you name it. Thanks for opening up your property for public access. So there's my PSA. Hope you feel good about me because I don't feel good about myself because I don't get a point. All right, Callie, go ahead. Your opportunity to weigh in on round two.
All right. I'm going to the desert southwest for Mearns, little Montezuma quail. The best way I can describe it is they popcorn when they flush. Have you guys ever hunted Mearns before?
Yep.
Yeah. And they hold so well. Holy moly, they hold so well. Almost to the point where it scares you when they finally do flush because you're about standing on top of them, right? So my advice is not only do they popcorn, though, they also popcorn and dive bomb. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first Mearns quail that I shot, he went up and dived, and I somehow followed him. I don't know how. But so my tip is to be prepared, take your time, and don't get ready for a big covey flush. They're going to more pew, 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 pop out of the ground one at a time almost.
Yep. That's a great suggestion. I equate how they fly. Well, they hold very similar to woodcock, where you're in them before they flush. Yeah. And they've
in them on top of them. Them,
right? And then they flush closer to like how sharpies flush as opposed to bobwhites because they, you know, 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 5 get up, and they're always just like sharpies. There's always a sleeper bird in a covey of Montezuma, so save that shell for the sleeper too. That's a great suggestion, Callie. All right, at the end of round two, Andy Edwards, 2 points. Ryan Sparks, 2 points. Callie Parmalee, 2 points. I don't have 2 points. So I want to thank Onyx, another proud partner of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and this podcast. Click on the link in the show notes for this episode and use the code PFQF on that Onyx link, and you will get 20% off your Onyx subscription, and a portion will go back to supporting Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. So thank you very much to our partners at Onyx. All right, rounding second, heading to third base, Ryan Sparks leads off round three.
Okay, for bobwhites, if you wing a bobwhite, and you should continue to watch them, because when they hit the ground, they're probably dead right there where they landed. A lot of times you'll shoot at a quail and it won't look like you'll hit it, but you'll notice a leg will drop. So they'll drop that leg, and usually where they come down, they're dead right there. Bobwhites, in my experience, very, very rarely run when they are hit or injured.
Dang it.
That's great feedback. We don't want to. Oh,
got me.
Really? Wow.
Got me in order. Like, yeah, that was my next one. Look hard for cripples.
Really? Welcome Martin, to the Losers Club, Andy.
Yep. So I got to give a couple shout outs. Mark McConnell, I might have asked for some Dr. Mark McConnell out of Mississippi State, but he referred to James Martin's research out of University of Georgia. Across a lot of states, they're showing that wounding mortality, crippling mortality, or loss is higher than we thought. And, you know, give the area a really good search before moving on. And kind of coupled with that, and I didn't relent earlier, because I did have, you know, shoot the rise only and don't chase singles. Pick a bird, don't shoot just into the rise. Like pick a single, but that crippling loss is way higher than we think. And sometimes it's hard to see that leg drop, but just search them out. Yeah, trust the dog, but we've all hunted with dogs that weren't just real great at finding those cripples. But I'd say that's time well spent searching out that possible cripple.
How do you feel, Ryan, about you're just whacking battleships left and right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any Navy recruiters out there that need some battleships, you know, dropping bombs.
All right, well, here's my opportunity to get a second point.
All right.
I went, don't be afraid to add extra dog power when you're chasing quail. You know, and it comes to... my thinking, Andy, is a conversation we've had with James Martin and some of the telemetry work on bobwhite, and also Mark McConnell too, where they've done so much research with radio collared quail and running dogs on them and not being able to find them, like literally walking right past them. And, you know, it's sort of tradition to not go more than two dogs in a hunt. But, you know, especially if you're hunting great big grasslands and you have extra dog power, like those noses can make such a huge difference that having three, four dogs covering big ground, running 300 yards out, like Callie said earlier, I think that could be super helpful. So I will add a second point to the list. Any that hit on anybody's in the clear?
No, I'm gonna say like a near myth there, but I would beg that there's a distinction between mine and what you just said.
Okay, we'll ask for a vote a little when you trot it out.
Okay.
All right. Since you lost your pick, this will be our final round three. So since Andy lost his round three, Callie will be the final one. So go ahead, Callie.
All right. I think this happens with every quail species. When a covey breaks, though, singles can hold and things can get a little chaotic, right? All of a sudden you're standing there and you're admiring a bird, and there goes another bird that flushes to your left, and there goes another one that flushes to your right. And so my tip is, be careful. I know it's tempting to start shooting because it's exciting and you're in the heat of the moment, but remember you've got friends and dogs all around you and near you, and you don't want anyone to get hurt. So maybe leave those singles be and let them come back together later and go after them the next day.
Yeah.
Because I've been in that situation when you're standing there and you're admiring stuff and you got a dog retrieving and you got singles popping everywhere. It's tempting to start firing off shots. Yep. But
adrenaline's still high. Together.
Yeah, adrenaline's high.
Yeah.
Everyone's excited. And then the dogs can start going a little bit nuts too. Oh, yeah. So then your training is out the window.
And your mental image of where everybody was before the flush, you sort of lose that. Yep. As things start to get chaotic, and then you have one that tries to slide out the back door and you've forgot that somebody else is moving that direction. So that's a tremendously important note of safety, but just being ethical too. Mm-hmm. Great one. All right. As we head into the final round, we have a two-way tie at the top with QF editor and gun dog editor, Ryan Sparks, Callie Parmalee, and Andy and I are picking up the rear with 2 points. I'll jump into a three-way tie with my fourth and final to kick off round four. And that is my fourth and final tip is to look for pollinator habitat in the summertime and mark it on Onyx and come back to that pollinator habitat and hunt it in the fall, because quail, in my opinion, more than any other upland species, use that quail habitat. I think about Kansas, Nebraska, sunflowers, compass plants, like, my gosh, that stemmy stuff that stands a little taller and creates protection from avian predators, like quail love that stuff. And that's my fourth tip is, I guess, to Ryan's point about looking for landowner contacts outside of the season. Same thing with pollinator habitat. Look for it outside of the season. All right. I get up close good to tip. Anybody?
No, but that's a good tip. Quail and butterflies and bees go together. So right on.
No, I think it's great. I've got, you can't, we're not, video here, but I'm holding a softball, and it's a Working Lands for Wildlife sponsored demonstration tool for quail habitat. And there's a method, it's called the Shet method, softball habitat evaluation technique. And pretty neat deal. Bob, I'll copy this out, send you the show notes, maybe stick it in there. It's pretty neat, but it's a really good way to look at that habitat, because more often than not, when you go meet with a landowner, when you're talking with people that think they used to have quail and they don't now, there's stuff way too thick. If this ball can't roll on the ground freely, a quail can't run through there. We need a lot of, like, let's say 30% dirt, just bare ground, very, very open habitat at that 6-inch level. And so softball is a pretty awesome evaluation tool for that. It's about the size of an adult quail. So yeah, I would absolutely agree on the pollinator habitat side of things.
So you even have a prop to support my point, but I didn't sink your battleship.
You didn't sink my battleship.
I can't win in this game.
No.
No.
I felt that it was too on the nose. I had to avoid it.
That was perfect. I love it. I love it. Callie for the lead.
For the win?
Well, possibly. Ryan still has a no. Ryan still has a chance.
No. There's no way I'm
talking about winning until I hear the tip.
No, I should not win this game at all. All right, Gambel's quail, mixing it up. They're going all Western species. If you're hunting gambels, I want you to find the most thorny, nastiest vegetation that you can find and walk straight through it. They like riverbeds as well, but they're looking more for mesquite And but I've also found them just along desert foothill, mountain foothills. So, but they tend to stay in a home range as well. I've hunted them 1 year and found them and come back, and they were within 100 yards of where they were the year before. So
cool.
Look for those dry riverbeds,
cat's,
mesquite, thorny.
Cat's paw. Is that the one that's like the
devil? Cat's paw. Everything out there is the devil. Yeah.
But you know what I saw? Like I've only been once and I didn't have a dog and we kind of relied on some other dog power, but I wouldn't hesitate to take my dogs after having been there. I've hunted much worse conditions in Nebraska or South Dakota with sand bears.
No, it's fine. Boot them up.
Yeah. Because of the rocks and the dry conditions, I think more so than thorns on the ground. But,
you might run into a cactus on the ground, but mostly it's the rocks that you're,
Cholla can you're be dealing rough, with,
the sharp red rock. Yeah.
Yeah, I've driven my dogs to that point, like to Arizona, hunting Merns or Montezumas, which is like hunting Montana and the habitat there they live in. But to your point about Cali, gambles quail, scaled quail, like dogs learn real quick what to avoid and not to avoid. And they don't need to be overly protected. They can figure it out and avoid those cactuses. And it's super fun to watch them learn a new bird too.
Oh yeah. They're smart and they know what to get into and not. But does the boot just keeps your dog running longer, because the first day they're gonna run through their pads most likely. Yeah. And so just go ahead and boot them up. Yeah. There's no harm in doing it.
I think we talked about this before on a podcast too, but like for me, gambles, like just You talked about it on the Prairie Grouse podcast, but like put on some good boots that are like running shoes, basically. I mean, get after it, because you're going to have to run, otherwise you're never going to get them to flush.
They do. Actually, that's funny that you say that, because I have literally chased down a covey of gambles and could not get them to flush.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they hold well, but they just run out 30, 40 feet in front of you until finally you'll get them to, but I had to chase them down.
But speaking of that too, like when the dog figures that out, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a dog figuring out a rooster pheasant, like, oh, I know what to do. Make that circle.
And with that, Callie takes at least a share of a victory with 4 points. Sparks, we'll get to you in a moment. Andy, will you be joining me with 3 points? You're up next.
All right. But this is one that I said you kind of, because it relates to dogs, but I think it's separate and better. Sorry, tried to stay serious there. But trust the dog. There have been a lot of studies that have shown that dogs are scenting, depending on conditions, but they are scenting birds and coveys significantly farther than we know. A lot of times we call them false points, like, the dog pointed, there's nothing there. It's because we're looking, 15, 20 feet, probably maybe out to 8 or 10 yards. But at times that scent cone can be, it's been shown it can be 75 yards ahead. And we often cuss the dog saying, there was nothing here. And there was, and I haven't seen it in that aspect on quail so much, but I have seen it a bunch in grouse, where I just am looking, I'm looking within 20 feet trying to find this grouse and thinking I'm right on top and the bird flushes and it's, maybe it ran some too, but trust the dog, the area of their, sense of smell is way bigger than we think.
I'm going to end the episode with something along those lines. So, and the fact that, you're going to get to 3 points, Sparks and Callie, they really don't care if you get to 3 points, because they're going to likely get to 4. I'm going to give it to you, man. You can join me in the 3 points. I think it was different enough for sure. So
different.
Different enough, trust the dog versus mine was dog power. Cause what I was pushing back against is I think that there's a very hardened tradition about two dogs
yes.
and no more in quail hunting. And I think, and I think that's more, you know, in Southeast Baboy country, running a brace.
Yep.
But there are instances, particularly in the Great Plains, where it's a sea of grass.
Yeah.
And putting an extra dog or two on the ground is super helpful.
Absolutely.
All right, Sparks, can you tie Cali for another another victory?
Oh, yeah.
A shared victory.
Oh, yeah.
Never a doubt.
So, considering I have zero Bob White facts, I'm going.
That's okay. Yes. You had six to choose from. It was a very wise choice on your part to trot out all the other species.
Yeah, it was.
It was perfect too. It's great. We're great winners together because you did all the Western quail and all my tips are Bob Whites. So, yeah,
I think we should vote in Cali.
Last tip.
We should vote in a minute on his.
You want Cali to get?
I think I know who's not going to win. Up instantly.
Trying to throw me under the bus. So I was kind of, I had those first three and I was thinking about this yesterday and I was like, I'm going to call my dad. He's sitting in a combine picking corn right now, big quail hunter his whole life. And he was like, let me think about that. I'll call you back. And he called me back and he said, smoke a cigarette.
Yep, Cali's the winner.
You know what, you win.
Well, hold on.
Message in North by Black and Mild.
Hear me out. Hear me out. So a guy, a family member of mine, and a guy my dad used to hunt with a lot, Max Hurt. He was kind of had the reputation in the little town I grew up in as being the quail guy, and when he was hunting quail and his dogs got birdie, but they weren't going on point, he didn't get in a hurry. He'd just pull out a cigarette and smoke a cigarette and watch his dogs. And the wind would tell him kind of what was going on with the smoke of his cigarette. So I'm not condoning smoking, but what I'm really saying
is... What about
is,
marijuana? Would that be okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Roll a joint.
Roll a joint.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Just chill.
What I'm really saying...
Grab a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah. But take your time. Let the dogs work. If you've got an injured bird, or I mean, there was a lot of talk earlier about people throwing people under the bus that hunt singles. I grew up hunting singles. There's different cultures of quail hunting in different parts of the world and in the Midwest. That is something we do. We're not shooting out coveys. We're cognizant of how many birds we shoot. But single birds don't put off as much scent. It takes time for that scent to... like be enough where a dog can detect it and build up and they can get into some crazy areas when it's just a single bird. So sometimes, you know, I'll sit there and I'll pretend I'm smoking a cigarette and I'm just watching the world go by. The other thing you can do is some people are antsy.
Just watching the world burn, man.
Yep. Yep. Some people can't stand it. So you can drop a GPS pin or old school, drop your hat, go hunt the draw or whatever that you're hunting and come back 20 or 30 minutes later and that bird will have plenty of time to put off scent and collect. And it's amazing how much that little bit of time can make. So
I think that's a great tip.
I like it.
That tip brought to you by Marvel.
I like it.
I think that wins. I think that wins. Smoke a cigarette. Well, chill.
I'm throwing the challenge flag, man. Mm. It's just you had three great tips. And then the fourth tip is smoke a cigarette. You know, grab a lung dart.
It was a good tip disguised as a off the wall.
Yeah,
tip.
That's true.
I like it.
So
let the dogs work. Give the dogs time. That's the real tip. That's the
Cali's
real tip.
Being very magnanimous here. I'm lobbying for you.
I really wanted you to lose, Ryan, but dang it, I gotta agree.
Did anyone else say smoke a cigarette?
No, sir, no.
I did not.
We could take it a different direction. Like after you've shot the quail, smoke a cigarette.
I don't disagree, Ryan. When I've watched like the Smiths work their bird dogs down in Texas, like those dogs are slow and methodical. Let them do their thing. Those quail are holding tight, and they're in there somewhere now. I don't have a pack of Marlboros on me, but
lung darts for habitat. Here we go.
That's right. and I think
there's more than one way to start a quail fire.
Yeah.
I'm
voting no. Cali's magnanimously voting yes, Andy. What do you say?
It's the watershed moment. I mean, I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to give him the thumbs up.
Wow. Andy is voting in support of Ryan's
death. Thanks, brother.
And I feel as though I need to come back too and say about the singles, you're right. Like, I absolutely in areas like if I'm hunting in the Midwest, in areas like Kansas or Nebraska, Oklahoma, I think, yeah, absolutely, I would follow up. Around here, probably not going to follow up the singles. But yeah, in areas that are just low population numbers, that sort of thing.
Well, there you have it. Round four, at the end of round four, Cali Parmalee, 4 points. And Ryan Sparks, 4 points. You're co-winners. So Sparks, I remember you were a co-winner on the Pheasant Hunting Podcast. Remind me, where'd you finish on the prairie grouse?
I lost.
Oh, you had an opportunity for a triple crown.
Yeah, I think I only got 2 points or maybe or 3 points in the grouse one. Okay. But stiff competition every
time. I guess you should, as the QFJ editor, win the quail battleship, or at least tie for it. So congratulations to both of you. Your prize pack is in the mail. Not really.
Comes with pack of cigarettes.
Yeah. No grain belt premium pack
of cigarettes, please.
That's your prize pack.
Marlboro Reds.
It's actually some wacky tobacco. So hopefully the U.S. Postal Service doesn't catch it. It's great for quail habitat and dump. All right. Fun final thought. Yeah, wacky. You like that, huh?
Yeah.
All right. We'll go Sparks, Andy, Callie. To close this out, if you can go on a quail hunt anywhere, where are you going? Ryan, kick us off.
All right. I've mentioned it before, but a little known secret. There are wild bobwhite quail in the Bahamas. I'm going to the Bahamas. I'm hunting bobwhites. I'm bringing my dog. And then I'm going to do a little fly fishing on the flats for bonefish and permit. And I cannot think of a better cast and blast trip than wild bobwhites and permit and bonefish on the fly. So,
and that's it for me. Is going to be hard to beat. Andy, you're up next.
He's trying. There's a bit of an influence trying to creep in because I had one, and then I'm like, you know, I may come back with a different one that's kind of. Similar location, just a little farther north and west, but just north of the Everglades in Florida, hunting bobwhites in very wet conditions in those hummocks and little grassy areas that are just out of the water. A lot of it's because you get to ride in these huge monster swamp buggies, and I got a whole lot of redneck in me, I'm sure you can tell, and that just, you're sitting 6-8 feet up above all this stuff looking out over that. Pretty amazing.
Those sets are super cool.
Yeah. And then you're pretty close to the coast. You could get out on some snook or maybe some redfish, some speckled trout, a little bit of that, a little surf and turf, a little more redneck version of surf and turf.
I like it.
I'll send you your cigarettes. Yeah.
Might be a black and mild involved as well. I'll let them take plenty of time.
This podcast is really taking a turn.
This is, I never would have predicted cigarettes and fly fishing with turkey basters. And
I drug us in the gut.
I gave up on you being my mental compass a while ago. We're going to be okay.
Mental or moral?
Either.
Same either thing. One. Okay.
You know what I meant. You're still in there for both.
Help us out. Where are you going?
I'm going anywhere my dogs want to go, anywhere I can follow my dogs. But this year I'm looking forward to Arizona, friend camp, down near deep, deep, deep south Arizona to hunt merns and gambles and inviting some newbie friends who have never hunted them before to give them that experience. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Terrific. Terrific.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
That's where I was going, but.
Bring your cigarettes.
Right. You're gonna need them. You're gonna
need. Where are you going, Bob? I asked you last time.
You know, so I gravitate towards the same Arizona landscape that Callie talked about. I really love the ability to get your ass kicked chasing Murns and then go to the desert and it's kind of free and easy. I don't know that I'd smoke a cigarette while I walked, but you know, switching it up between those three species, the Murns, the Gambles, the Scalies, that probably pulls me as well. I toyed with the idea of the Nebraska, Kansas, Great Plains mixed bag where your dog goes on point. You don't know if it's going to be a rooster, a covey of bobwhites, some places scalies, or prairie chickens. Yeah. I love that moment when your dog goes on point and it could be anything. And that's pretty exciting. But so those are the two things, that two destinations that really come to mind in quail country. All right. Well, thank you, Ryan Sparks, Andy Edwards, and Callie Parmalee for this episode of On the Wing podcast. And congratulations to, I am going to file an official notice challenging this victory, but against Ryan Sparks. But thank you to Ryan and Callie for bringing winning tips together for the first ever game of Quail Hunting Battleship. I'm Bob St. Pierre, thanking you, the listener, for listening. And please check out quailforever.org and please join our organization and help us create more habitat and places to chase our bird dogs. And one final thought, always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening, folks.